Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. I'm Ewan Kerr, sitting in for Kerry Miller here on NPR News. For the rest of this hour, we're going to offer what we hope will be some help for surviving the holidays. The term mansplaining has become popular in recent years, at least in some circles, to describe an uncomfortable situation. The definition in Wikipedia is, quote, to explain something to someone, typically a man to a woman, in a manner regarded as condescending or patronizing. It's a phenomenon of the workplace and the home. It's common in academia too. And of course, we also have the holiday party situation. While the phenomenon is not new, a 2008 essay by Rebecca Solnit called Men Explain Things to Me brought a new focus to interactions happening every day and causing at least anger and often, as Solnit argues, a perpetuation of gender inequality. There are critics, of course, who decry the use of the term, saying it is in itself inherently sexist. So, with the holidays upon us, the overwhelmingly female production staff of this show felt it would be a good time to talk about mansplaining and what to do about it. We'd like to hear your thoughts and experiences. Give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. You can also join the conversation on the blog with Stephanie Curtis at nprnews.org/live. We have two guests today who have many thoughts on this topic. First of all, we have Georgine Wong. She is the CEO of Fairy Godboss, an organization working to improve workplaces and the lives of women. Good morning, Georgine.
Good morning.
And also we have Julie Zeilinger. She is editor of MTV Founders and founder and editor of the Women's Media Center F-Bomb, which describes itself as a blog and community created by and for teen and college-age women and men who care about their rights and want to be heard. Good morning.
Hello.
So, Georgine, maybe if I could start with you. This is not a new phenomenon. It was this Rebecca Solnit essay, which provided a lot of focus. She described something that happened to her at a party. Could you give us a thumbnail sketch of what happened? It's, a story to which many people might relate.
I believe that she was meeting someone at their home, somebody who had been quite successful based on, I guess, the size of his home, and it may have been a holiday party. And he was, they started talking about her book. Of course, he didn't realize that she was the author, and he cut her off in the discussion and, you know, told her what an amazing piece it was. And the whole time, you know, she couldn't get a word edgewise in about the fact that she was, in fact, the author. And I guess he had even assumed in talking about the book that it was a man who had written it. And in the end, of course, it turned out that he hadn't read it. She was the author, and hopefully he was a little bit embarrassed.
She wrote this essay, which was then published online and has later become kind of the anchor piece in a book of several essays about this. What was it about this that really captured the public imagination?
Well, I think it's something that many women, especially in professional settings and workplace environments, can relate to. A lot of women, I mean, we run a site for women to talk about their workplace experiences, and many women share anecdotes and stories about how they're not only just talked over, but their ideas are often restated by men who then get sort of credit for their ideas or have things explained to them when, you know, if you're a marketing expert and you're talking to another marketing expert, you shouldn't, there's certain terminology and things that you don't need explained to you. But I guess there are many instances where women feel like men sort of talk down to them in talking about professional things.
So, Julie Zeilinger, is this, I mean, how big of an issue is this? How big of an issue is mansplaining out in the larger world? Is it just something that some people get irritated by, or is it a major problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think actually one of the incredible things Rebecca Solnit did by labeling this and giving it a name and really putting some weight to it is recognize that it's an experience that's incredibly common for women. It's something that many of us experience every day of our lives. And yet so many of us did sort of consider a smaller issue and something that we shouldn't be complaining about, especially given the context of human rights and women's rights violations happening in our own country and across the world. But and I think that it is important to acknowledge that, you know, this isn't a human rights violation. It's something we experience in a more subtle way on a day-to-day basis. But I think that being said, that doesn't undermine what this actually does to women on a day-to-day basis. I think at its face value, mansplaining can seem sort of unintentional or not that big of a deal, but it really points to this deeper presumption that women don't know what they're talking about, or that what they have to say and what they think isn't legitimate. And I think that in and of itself is a really big issue and speaks to a much broader systemic way that we treat women in general in this country.
We are talking mansplaining this morning here on NPR News. Call us with your question or comment at 651-227-6000. You can get us toll-free at 800-242-2828. You can also join us online at nprnews.org/live. We have Kelly on the line from St. Paul. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
What's your experience been?
Well, I'm pursuing a career in nursing, and we kind of know there's not a lack of jobs in that area. So it's been fun to go back to school. And for the past couple years, whenever I'm at these holiday parties, I find, you know, my uncles coming up and asking about, you know, what I'm doing and what I'm going to school for, and like immediately jumping into advising me about what to do once I become a nurse. And it turns into this sort of one-sided conversation. And I think what's kind of interesting is that I feel like, you know, I don't want to call them on it. Like, it's my job to, like, make them comfortable in the conversation. So I don't want to say, like, yep, I know I'm going to school for this, and I understand what's valuable and what I should pursue and what's interesting. But, you know, I always kind of let the conversation go on and then eventually fizzle out when they kind of run out of things to say.
But that can take some time, I would expect.
Yeah, it can take a little while.
Well, Georgine, Julie, do you have any advice?
Well, I think it's always good to be upfront, and women stereotypically are very good at communicating. And I think there are some times when you can just sort of interrupt. I mean, these sound like your relations, so, you know, that's how you deal with your family members can be sensitive. But I guess if this were happening in a work environment, I would say, you know, you can just interrupt and say, you know, I'm going to school for nursing. I'm learning quite a lot, and you'd be surprised that, you know, these are some of the things that are covered, you know, in our coursework. And you can just sort of, I think, try to steer the conversation to what you know and just be explicit about it.
Julie, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great advice, and I would agree, especially with family members or with people you're close to, there can be sort of complicated dynamics that you'll have to navigate. But I think one of the reasons mansplaining more generally persists is because women sort of give up, because to be fair, it does take a lot of energy to try to combat these things when it is so common and happens on a day-to-day basis or happens so frequently. But I think for a lot of people who perpetuate this, it doesn't excuse them, but it's ignorance. It's maybe them not realizing that they're sort of perpetuating this behavior and speaking up and asserting the credibility you have in this field and sort of pointing out what they're doing might help prevent them from doing it again in the future.
And just to go back to one point, I mean, the whole dynamics of relatives versus a boss or a colleague, I mean, if we could explore that a little bit. I mean, Georgine, you mentioned that, you know, that is a little more difficult. I mean, how do you approach that situation?
Well, I think it's maybe the best way to discuss this is to have a specific example. So a woman on our site was talking about how she worked at an architecture firm and advertising. And so in particular, and she said, and the boss kind of said in a room full of people that since it was rare for a woman to be in this industry, that maybe she should focus her design portfolio on more feminine things. And she was in a room full of men when this happened. And, you know, that's a little bit insulting, obviously, because this woman, you know, could be interested in designing a wide range of things, maybe feminine things, maybe not feminine things. And I think she felt tongue-tied and didn't know what to do. But I think in these situations, it's okay to say, well, these are the things I'm interested in, state what they are. And they, you know, if it's pretty obvious that they're not feminine things, then, you know, that may make her boss blush, or maybe hopefully he notices that what he did. But as Julie said, it's, you know, it may have been completely unintentional. And if she just sort of takes control of the conversation, that's, I think, the best advice for women in these situations. They just have to say that actually, you know, dot, 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 finish the sentence and explain how, you know, that was an incorrect assumption.
So, and Julie, you, your blog is aimed at younger women, mm-hmm. and which, of course, introduces a whole other dynamic about age and supposed respect for elders and things like that. What mm-hmm. are there additional things that you recommend to younger women on how to deal with the dynamics of older relatives?
Yeah, I mean, I think the same advice really does apply. We just, as you said, we have to acknowledge, you know, age plays into the introduces an entirely new factor. I think especially when you look at young women and the way that we're still socialized in this country and in our society to be to take up as little room as possible, and there's still all kinds of purity and femininity standards that we have to live up to, in which we're encouraged to be silent. That makes it that much harder. And I think for older, that's a lot of older women still very much carry that socialization with them. But it's, I think, in my work with young people, have seen it's incredibly strong because they're confronting it right now. And I think it also introduces another aspect of ageism. We talk about mansplaining as a very gendered phenomenon, which it is. But I think you could make the argument that for in our society, we sort of undermine young people anyway. I see this all the time in my work. I work with young writers, and I've come into this presumption that just because someone is young, they can't have an intelligent or credible thought. So I think that that does definitely add another dynamic, but I think the same advice does apply in that you can blatantly call it out, or just sort of, as Georgine say, actually, and then really make the case for why you have something to say.
I mean, I don't want to kind of explain things away, but I know in my own personal interactions, meeting the young relatives who I hadn't seen in a while, you immediately go to certain safe topics, mm-hmm. which as soon as I am like, how's school going? What are you thinking about in terms of careers? Those old standbys. I almost immediately think, why did I say that? Because this is just a quagmire where this is going to end badly. What preparation perhaps should older male folks, be doing for these conversations? Any thoughts?
I mean, I think especially with young people, I mean, ask about substantive questions. I think a lot of older people are, like, as someone who does work with teens and college age kids on a day-to-day basis, I mean, they have thoughts about the election. That can be a kind of a minefield in a lot of ways. But I think young people are politically aware and are aware of activism that's happening around them and are really engaged with the world in a way that adults don't often understand and don't. And as you're saying, by only asking these really standard questions, aren't really giving them the opportunity to explore. And I think it could be really beneficial to try experimenting with asking young people questions they'd ask anyone else. You know, results might vary, but I think it's definitely within reason, sort of the appropriateness of what you're talking about. But try asking them a sort of deeper question that you'd ask anyone else.
Point taken. We are talking mansplaining this morning here on NPR News. Call us with your question or comment at 651-227-6000 or toll free at 800-242-2828. You can also get to us online at nprnews.org/live. Stephanie Curtis joins me in the studio.
Hi.
Are people joining the conversation
online?
Yeah,
people are joining the conversation online. Library Banana, I love that name. Library Banana writes, I think we women have the rock and a hard place problem. We're more concerned about what others understand what we're saying, and I think often it means that we come off as being too insecure sounding. And Jeff also says something that I think is interesting, that he says, I worry that throwing around the term mansplaining might cause people to become defensive and cause more problems.
Well, actually, we have Kathleen on the line from Minneapolis who had a question about that. Kathleen?
Hi, great timing. Thank you so much for covering this important topic to bring awareness to this issue. So my question is, in a corporate setting, I work with all a diverse group of people, and 95% of the guys that I work with are great, but I think it's I struggle with the 5%, and how do I describe to, for example, management or the people I work with, kind of a code or a synonym to say, hey, this guy is being a mansplainer. I don't want to come out and use that term mansplainer, but just to kind of clue people in about this person's style. So any tips that you have would be very welcomed.
Okay, and I suppose also anytime you use the word patronizing, that's also kind of a bomb. Georgine Wong from Fairy God Boss, what advice do you have?
Well, if you're trying to describe the 5% to other people and sort of state that they're a problem, I think you can just use the words that you just used, which is that sometimes there are certain colleagues that you have who can be a little bit condescending or belittling in the way that they address the things that you've said or asked. I mean, is that something that you think would work?
Are you still with us, Kathleen? Well, I think Kathleen is gone. Sorry.
Okay. I guess I would just say that, you know, you don't have to use the word mansplaining because I think it is kind of divisive and, you know, it implies that the person is sexist, whereas maybe they are, maybe they aren't. They're just, you know, unaware and unintentionally saying something that, you know, offends.
Great. And then, Julie, would you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great advice in terms of a corporate setting. And I do think actually it might be a little aside to this conversation, but it is worth talking about the term mansplaining itself, because I think it's interesting. Rebecca Solnit has actually come out and said that she doesn't necessarily agree with that term because it is so gendered. And she actually had this great line in one of her essays where she said, you don't fight patronization by patronizing in return. And I think it's worth remembering that despite the term that we've given it, this really points to a much more systemic problem related to the way we think we are all trained to think about gender rather than trying to villainize men as doing this towards women. I think the point that really is coming out of this conversation is not always, but a lot of the time it is unintentional. It's just about the way we're raised, about the way women are raised to sort of make themselves smaller and men are sort of have this incredible confidence. And it's about interrogating that rather than blaming men.
I agree with Julie in part because I think as a former manager myself, I probably was guilty of interrupting, you know, probably men and women and saying things, maybe talking over them occasionally. I think something that a lot of certain personality types can do. And it's a little bit offensive to say, oh, this is only something men can do. Women can also be, you know, rude and interrupting and, you know, sort of exert their personalities over a room.
We have John on the line from Minneapolis. John, you have a resource for us.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak. A couple of years ago, I read a book by Deborah Tannen called You Just Don't Understand Differences in Communication Between Men and Women. And one thing it talked about was this the social hierarchical structure that men play out and always are trying to establish dominance one over the other. And that one of the ways that men try to assert their value or assert dominance over other men sometimes is by their knowledge and by displaying how much they know about something. For instance, I've been mansplained to by other men a lot about football. I don't know much about that, but it's something that I've actually, in looking at myself, I've been mansplaining to other people, both men and women, my entire life since I was a little kid. And I think I got a lot of ire for that. For doing that. But I think it's kind of something that kind of comes across natural, maybe just to kind of maybe to unintentionally to show off or sometimes to dominate. But a lot of times I think, you know, it could easily be if a man is talking to a woman, you know, he could be trying to assert a more dominant role, or he could just be maybe trying to kind of show off by how much he knows. I mean, Some people just kind of like to hear talk to hear themselves talk or something like that. And I don't think that it's necessarily, I don't want to say a bad thing, but it's, you know, it's not always trying to dominate somebody in the sense that it can have other more benign ways to it. And it's less of a sexist thing, I think, than just maybe like an established way of communication that maybe men are used to receiving praise for how much they know, knowledge, et cetera, like that.
That's an interesting point. Julie Zeilinger of WMCF Bomb, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really accurate and sort of points to the point I was making before about this being a broader structure. And I think it's less about individual men themselves than sort of this patriarchal system that we've created in which authority is sort of communicated through dominance. So I think that applies when women, as Georgine was saying, women can mansplain too. And I think a lot of the time, probably not all the time, but a lot of the time that is sort of women trying to gain authority in the way our society has taught everyone that authority is to be gained. So I think it's less about blaming men and telling men that they need to stop down talking to women specifically, and more, as this caller was saying, looking at the way we communicate in general and try to establish a more egalitarian means of communication altogether rather than blaming individual people.
And Georgine Wong, are we just talking about gendered ways of speaking to each other? Does it get down to a question sometimes of just the way that the genders do tend to speak differently to each other?
I think it does to some extent. The book that caller just referenced by Deborah Tannen, I actually thought it was a very interesting book, and I read it because it talks about how men are openly competitive with each other when they speak, whereas women, one of the things that women do is they don't necessarily try to undermine each other through speech if they're competing. They try to compete in nonverbal ways or outside that conversation by talking about people when they're outside the room. So I do think there are gendered differences in the way that people communicate, and you know, that's just biology or sociology, and it's hard to take ourselves out of that in any environment, in holiday parties with relatives or with coworkers, I think.
Georgine Wong is the CEO of Fairy God Boss. Julie Zeilinger is from WMCF Home. She is the founder and editor. We are going to take a break for the news here, but we would still love to hear your questions or thoughts. We have a bunch of people lined up online, but there's room for you. Call us with your question or comment at 651-227-6000, or toll-free 800-242-2828. You can also get to us online at nprnews.org/live. We are talking mansplaining this morning. We have two wonderful guests, Georgine Wong from she is the CEO of Fairy God Boss, and Julie Zeilinger. She is the editor of MTV Founders and the founder and editor of the Women's Media Center F-Bomb. So we have a lot of people on the line. Esther is calling in from Duluth. Good morning, Esther.
Good morning.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I think there's another flavor of this that has to do with women over a certain age. I have white hair, and it seems that helps people into an assumption that I am incapable of doing many simple things. For example, I was at a broken kiosk at the airport, and a very young person grabbed my passport out of my hand and started giving me very, very simple step-by-step instructions on how to check in. And if they had looked at my passport, they would have seen I fly a lot. And in a grocery store recently, I had a young man say to me, "Well, you couldn't possibly understand partitioning disk drives," when, of course, I've been working with computers for 40 years.
It's quite amazing sometimes the assumptions that people make.
Quite amazing.
Yeah.
And I have talked to many women, middle-aged and older, who say that they just sort of disappear. People assume that they don't know anything and aren't very capable.
Well, let me talk to our guests about this. Georgine, we've talked a little about younger women facing this situation. How about older women?
Yeah, I think it absolutely happens. Ageism in the workplace, that is. we read a lot of women who in our community, in our site, they talk about the fact that when they say things, sometimes what they say is being disparaged as, you know, they're called the mom. You know, mom is saying, oh, we can't do this, we have to do this. And that's obviously very inappropriate in a workplace setting. And an older woman may not even be a mother, but it's just, you know, there's certain assumptions also about how technologically not savvy somebody is, whether they, you know, we sometimes can just assume that older people don't use social media. I mean, these are all generalizations, and while they may be true, and maybe older women are better at, you know, following the rules when it comes to the workplace, it's definitely not appropriate to assume and sort of openly say things like that.
And Julie Zeilinger, you work with, again, with college age and younger women. Is this an issue that you deal with?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the other side of the coin of ageism that I was talking about before. And I think when we talk about mansplaining, you know, we often go straight to gender and sort of examine the gender dynamics. But I do think, as this caller said, and through my experience, there's definitely an element of age. And that can often be compounded with gender, as sort of Georgine was saying, with this discrediting women as sort of quote unquote moms, and can also go the opposite direction and saying you're just a little girl, you don't understand that. And I think it's just something that we should definitely be aware of as we try to address this issue, that it's not just about gender. There's also a lot of other compounding factors. I'm sure race, socioeconomic status probably play into it too. There's a lot more to explore here.
Stephanie Curtis is in the studio today. We're getting conversation online, too. What are
yeah.
you hearing?
So Annisler wrote into mprnews.org/live, and she wrote, "This happened to me at a guest lecture I was giving about a research study that I lead. After I gave an overview of the study's design, a male colleague interrupted and explained it again in almost identical terms. I didn't say anything then, but this is an annual lecture, and this colleague is a consistent mansplainer. Next year, I plan to respond with, 'Thank you, Bill. That's exactly what I said.' We need to call out mansplaining. Polite tolerance is tacit reinforcement."
This is a thing that we've also heard a lot about. Women explaining things, men explaining it again, but then taking credit for it. Georgine, do you see that in the workplace?
I think that does happen. And I don't know if you've heard the word bro-propriate. I guess you can call it a cousin to mansplaining.
I have not heard that one. Bro-propriate.
Well,
very cool. Yes, okay.
You know, that's sort of a term that I've heard used to describe men who take credit for ideas. And I completely agree with the approach to just say, thank you, that's exactly what I said. And in many ways, that's all that's sort of needed. And hopefully the person has enough self-awareness to, stop the next time.
Wonderful. We have Wendy on the line from Minneapolis. Wendy, you have an interesting thought on this. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm just wondering what your guests think about two ideas. One is, I totally agree that mansplaining goes across all gender identities and crosses ages, because I've heard it between young people down talking older people down talking younger people. But in the situation in general, what do you think of the person doing the mansplaining, the idea of them having insecurity? Because I've heard people say, well, like, apologize later. Well, I didn't know what else to say, and I just kept kind of like diarrhea of the mouth kind of a thing. And the other question is, besides the person maybe having insecurity, the person who's listening to the mansplaining, providing a victim-type situation, I don't like that word, but allowing it or supporting it, which I have heard a little bit of, but just wondering what you think about that insecurity and the victim type roles.
Well, Julie Zeilinger, could we throw that one in your direction?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it. And I think that there definitely is validity to that. And earlier in this program, we were sort of exploring the idea that this might be a more systemic thing and sort of the way that we've been socialized to communicate. And I think it sort of speaks to that, where the person doing the mansplaining, I think that you could interpret them trying to gain dominance over the person they're talking to, because that's how they've been taught to sort of assert themselves, as a form of insecurity. I mean, there's probably a much more respectful, egalitarian way of doing that. But the way that they've been taught is to sort of assert dominance. So I think that there definitely is validity to that. And I think in terms of the person being mansplained too, and I also don't like thinking of it as a quote unquote victim mentality, but I think it's more just about especially young women in that position not really knowing what to do or also not having the confidence to assert themselves. And I think that goes to a much deeper issue of the way we raise young women in this society. I mean, like another sort of a popular conversation that was going around in terms of gender was sort of like apologizing alongside this mansplaining conversation, how young women especially and women in general are constantly apologizing just for existing, for saying anything. And I think that plays into this as well, where if someone mansplains, especially to a younger woman, they'll sort of apologize for being mansplained to. And that's another issue we need to address of teaching young women, especially to assert themselves. So when this situation happens, it's less about just passively taking it. And as we've sort of been laying out throughout this conversation, saying, no, thank you, that's exactly what I just said, or actually, and just sort of playing with these tools to begin to assert themselves instead.
We have Bryce on the line from St. Paul. Bryce, you have an interesting thought on mansplaining and maybe being caught.
I guess from my perspective, you're dealing with social dynamic. You're dealing with interpersonal communication and a lot of ways of interacting and talking and dealing with, you know, sort of people back and forth. You know, it's very common to have somebody, you know, say something and then you will say something back. You know, you'll sort of say, this is what I heard you say. And I guess as a loving, caring man who wants to sort of have everybody be on, feel comfortable all of the time, you run into this, you know, you run into this where it's like, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to, you know, it's like, you know, you'll be accused of mansplaining and you'll be like, I wasn't trying to belittle you or make you feel uncomfortable or degrade you or anything else. I was just repeating what I had heard. And I think that, you know, men, you know, we can't even sit down on the subway or the bus without being accused of, you know, this, you know, there's all these buzzwords, manspreading, mansplaining, you know, and it's just like, okay, I'm a man. What do I do here? What am I supposed to do? Am I just supposed to, you know, can I have these interactions? And I just don't understand, you know, when you go into a situation with a good heart, not trying to be, you know, and there's a difference between when you take somebody's passport out of their hand and physically almost assault them to help them. There's a difference there. I understand that's crossing a barrier, but you know, I have a problem with the whole thing of labeling and then, you know, sort of we're supposed to know what to do.
Well, let's see what our guests think. Georgine Wang. Overused?
You know, I think, as Julie said in the beginning, the good bit about the words mansplaining and manspreading, you know, with respect to men spreading, I guess, their legs more beyond their space in the subway or train or bus situation, is that it brings to light a behavior that we sort of don't want to encourage. And humor is a way, I mean, mansplaining, the word sort of, you know, it caught people's attention. And the fact that we're even talking about it now, I think, shows that there's some benefit to that. But obviously, it can be overused and it can make people feel uncomfortable because they may think that, you know, they're just getting attacked just for speaking when they don't actually even mean anything bad. And I think, you know, I guess that's the downside of words like this. I don't know if it's overused. I don't think in most corporate settings I hear it very much, but, you know, that's just been my experience. I think it may be commented on more than it's actually openly used in workplace settings. That's just my experience.
And Julie Zollinger, you have any? Is this how do men come back from this?
Yeah, I mean, I to go back to that question, I don't think it's overused so much as the question here is getting at how it's used. And I think in a lot of ways, it has been kind of tagged as this accusatory tool for women to use when they feel that they're being mansplained at. It's sort of, they created this word that would sort of retarget men in that way. And I think that is problematic. And as this caller was saying, it really just results in the person who is being accused of mansplaining feeling accused of a crime rather than helping them understand what they may or may have not been doing to make someone else feel belittled. So I think it's less about the term itself and more about the way we use it. Instead of waging accusations at each other, trying to more thoughtfully engage in a conversation about what this behavior actually is, how it makes other people feel, and how we can all move forward instead of sort of pitting each other against each other.
We actually have Jim in Minneapolis on the line. He wanted to respond to what we've been talking about. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. Yeah, I'm a man, and I heard the gentleman who just called in a minute ago saying that now there are so many ways that it seems like men get called out for doing things that make people uncomfortable or being rude, like manspreading and mansplaining. And actually, as a man and a white man, I actually think that's maybe a good opportunity for men to think about those things, because other people in society, women, people of color, actually go through their days having to constantly be aware of how the way that they're standing or sitting or talking or engaging in conversations might be perceived by other people, might be seen as aggressive. And men tend to sort of think that whatever they do is normal, and don't question that. So I think that questioning, actually, that's an opportunity to reflect a little bit on what we have and maybe take for granted and shouldn't.
Well, thank you very much for that, Jim. I just want to have a quick question, because we've only got like a minute and a half left, but we're about to enter a new political era. We have a new president-elect. We'll shortly have a president who, in a way, seems to be the king of mansplaining. Are things about to get more tough, do you think, Georgine Wong?
Well, I think our president-elect does something very well, which is get across his message in quite often simple terms. And I would say that whether we're entering a new era or not in government, I mean, I think the clear takeaway is that sometimes interrupting the interrupters works like a charm. So I think that women and men and older people or younger people who feel that they're being down-talked to can, you know, take back the interruptions themselves by, in some ways, doing the same. I mean, and making people think twice about, you know, what they did in the first place.
We could obviously talk about this for a long, long time, but we've run out of time. Georgine Wong, the CEO of Fairy God Boss, thank you very much. And also we have Julie Zeilinger, who is the editor of MTV Founders and founder and editor of WMCF Bomb. Thank you very much for joining us, too.
Thank you.